ஆன் பண்ணியாச்சா?
Thank you.
Supreme Person. Sarupatuchi Kripa Vigrahaya, who has completely removed all contradictions to the scripture. Namo Abhisanthu, Abhaduta, O Master of all mystic power. Vija Bandalinga, as the characteristics of a person born in a Brahmin family. Niguda, cover, Nityanu Bhavaya, to him who is eternal self-realization. Tuvyam, to you. Translation, King Rahugana said, O most exalted personality, you're not different from the Supreme Personality of God, and by the influence of your true self, all kinds of contradictions and shastras are being removed. In the dress of a friend of a Brahmana, you are hiding your transcendental disposition. I offer my special obeisances unto you. For apart from the Brahma Samhita, we understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the cause of all causes. Rishabhadev was the direct incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes. His son, Bharat Maharaj, was now acting as a Brahmana. Jadavara had received his body from the cause of all causes. Thus he addresses Karna Vigrahaya. Text 2. O best of Brahmanas, my body is filled with dirty things, and my vision has been bitten by the serpent of pride. Due to my material conceptions, I am diseased. Your nectarian instructions are the proper medicine for one suffering from such a fever, and air cooling waters for one scorched by the heat. Report the conditions all has a body full of dirty things, bones, blood, urine, stool, and so forth. Nonetheless, the most intelligent men in the material world think that they are combinations of blood, bone, and urine, stool. If this is so, why can't other intelligent men be with these ingredients, which are so readily available? The entire world is going on under the bodily conception, creating a hellish condition unfit for any gentleman's living. The instructions given to King Rahugana by Jagvara are very valuable. They are like the medicine that can save one from a snake bite. The Vedic instructions are like nectar and cool water for one suffering from scorching heat. Text 3. Whatever doubts I have about a particular subject matter, I shall ask you about later. For the time being, these mysterious yoga instructions you have given me for self-realization appear very difficult to understand. Please repeat them in a simple way so I can understand them. My mind is very inquisitive, and I want to understand this clearly. Therefore, the Vedic literature instructs Kasmat Guru Prapadita Vigasa Sri Uttamam. An intelligent man must be very inquisitive to know the transcendental science deeply. Therefore, one must approach the Guru, the spiritual master. Although Jadavara explained everything to Maharaj Rahugana, it appears that his intelligence was not perfect enough to understand clearly. He therefore requested a further explanation. As stated, Bhagavad Gita Tadvidi Pranipatena Pariprasnena Sevaya, the student must approach the spiritual master and surrender unto him fully. He must also question him in order to understand his instructions. One should not only surrender the spiritual master, but also render loving service unto him, so the spiritual master will be pleased with the student and explain and transmit the subject matter more clearly. A challenging spirit for the spiritual master should be avoided if one is always in learning the Vedic instructions in depth. Next 4, O Master of Yoga Power, you said that fatigue resulting from moving the body here and there is appreciated by depth perception, but actually there is no fatigue. It simply exists in a matter of formality. By such inquiries and answers, no one can come to a conclusion to have the truth. Because of your presentation of this statement, my mind is a little disturbed. Therefore, formal inquiries and answers about the bodily conception do not constitute knowledge of the absolute truth. Knowledge of the absolute truth is quite different from the formal understanding of bodily pleasures and pleasures. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna informs Arjuna that the pains and pleasures experienced in relation to the body are temporary. They come and go. One should not be disturbed by them. but to tolerate them and continue with spiritual realization. So here we have just an introduction to the subject matter of the chapter, which is answering the doubts of King Rahuvidam after Jagvara spoke. Jagvara spoke many things, and some of them appear contradictory, and some of them are a little bit ambiguous in their meaning. So therefore, Rahuvidam here takes the opportunity to inquire from him after his he was finished, which is permissible because, as we know, Bhagavad Gita says pariprashnena. One should know the truth by thorough questioning in approaching the devotees of the Lord. So therefore he was not disrespectful in doing such a thing, provided that his questions were not simply a waste of time or simply asked to show off his own abilities or to get material knowledge for some reason or other. So when Bhagavad Gita says that the student should inquire, that means he is serious about the spiritual subject matter and the spiritual goal, and therefore he asks questions pertaining to not that, not pertaining to his material body, or his sickness, or his marriage, or his family life, or his job, or whatever, which has often become the subject matter of or the questions that will be asked. But these are not the subject matter that should be discussed. The subject matter should be, how is one supposed to get out of this material world? How is one supposed to develop an attraction for the Supreme Lord? So, those are the questions that should be asked. Here we find that Rahuvidam did ask proper questions because he was clarifying the statements made by Janabara, some of which will look a little bit contrary to bhakti and will seem to indicate that the whole material world is illusion, etc. So, therefore, the king had significant questions to ask regarding the statements of Jagbharat. So Jagbharat is a devotee of the Lord, and we see that by the conclusion he reached in the end of the last chapter. And of course he is the let's say offspring of Vrishabhadeva, who is the Lord himself. And Bharat of course is also a devotee of the Supreme Lord, who actually had a realization of Vishnu. So there's no question about the position of Jagvara. He's not an impersonalist or a devata worshipper or a yogi. He's actually a devotee of the Lord. Nevertheless, he makes statements which could be taken as jnana or yoga or whatever. So King Rahuvidam therefore is inquisitive to ask about these certain statements that he has made. So one of the statements here we see is that he says that Jagvara said that actually we don't have any tiredness, we don't feel fatigue. There's a perception of fatigue, but actually we're not fatigued. So then is that experience illusory or what? And if one experiences pain in the material world, is it not pain? Is it something else? Is it not an experience or not? So direct perception is real or not real. So of course if we take the extreme impersonal version, yeah, it is unreal. Because nothing in the material world is real, even the material body is not real. What to speak of the objects we perceive. So all these experiences are unreal. So that is one version, which is extreme. And also, not exactly stated anywhere in the Vedic literatures explicitly. So what does it mean when Jagvara says, yeah, there is no fatigue, there is no pain, etc. So on the other hand, in normal experiences. We accept these feelings and senses, etc., pain and pleasure, or hot or cold, or whatever. We experience them and accept them as real. But are they factually real or not? So according to Vaishnava Siddhanta, yes, they are real experiences. And the soul itself experiences them. The only problem is that they are experienced by the soul, but via ahankara and the material body. So therefore, there is a link between the self and the material body through ahankara. And this causes us to feel pain or fatigue or whatever. If that connection is not there, yes, we can experience something, but we will not experience it in the same way. So ultimately, all these experiences end up as either happiness or suffering, happiness or distress. These are the dualities of the material world. So ultimately, the Atma is beyond the dualities of the material world. Atma cannot be cut, cannot be burned, cannot be dried, cannot be whatever. So the soul itself cannot become fatigued at all. It's non-material. Fatigue is only something to do with the material body and the chemical reactions that take place there. How can the soul feel pain? Because it cannot be injured in any way. It cannot grow old. Nothing can happen to the soul. So birth, death, old age, disease, sickness, pain, etc. cannot be actually experienced by the Atma. So it is truthful, yes. But are they experiences? Yes, they are experiences. Because we relate with the material body. So we get these experiences of happiness and distress and tiredness or whatever. Because the body goes through certain chemical reactions in the material world. It can get injured, it can get old, it can die, it can get tired, it can get sleepy or whatever. All these are reactions that take place in the material body. So the Atma identifies with those through ahankara and then says, I am experiencing pleasure, pain, hot, cold, tiredness, sickness, old age, death, etc. So the experience is real, but it's misplaced because it's not actually the Atma's pleasure or pain. It's the experience of the body. The body is one of those experiences, and it is experienced by the Atma through the medium of ahankara. That's all. So in one sense, yes, it is false. Not completely false, but it's a false designation. A very subtle designation, transfer of experience also, which is very difficult to detect. So anyway, this is a puzzling statement. The Atma doesn't feel fatigue or whatever, doesn't have any. So then we conclude the Atma doesn't experience anything. So how is that possible that we don't experience anything? The Atma is the source of consciousness in the material body, so it must be experiencing something. So this becomes a question. The king is doubtful. How can it be? The Atma has no consciousness. So therefore he is, or is the Atma always blissful or whatever? Am I really actually blissful when I seem to be suffering? That doesn't seem right either. We cannot simultaneously be happy and suffering at the same time. So there is a complexity in, because of the statement, and therefore King Raghuvan asked the question, you please clarify this question because it is difficult to understand. So then he says, I become disturbed because of this. You do not understand the nature of the talk of Jadvara, even though he also accepts the authority of Jadvara because some of the statements were quite true. So he asked this question to clarify the statement so that there will be consistency in the philosophy. So that is ultimately what the Acharyas do. They go to the scripture and look at the seeming contradictory elements and attempt to explain them so that there is a consistent philosophy without contradiction. So we should not expect that Shastras will only say very simple things. They will say bewildering things, confusing things, contradictory things also. And therefore, it's necessary that some of the great intelligence and wisdom and realization explains these things. So this is what the Acharyas do. They go through all the different statements and the contradictions, and they try to explain them to the best of their ability and their realization to come up with a consistent version of Siddhanta. So that is why we have commentaries written by the various Acharyas to give a consistency to the various statements in the scripture. Some things are straightforward, they don't need commentary. Other things, yes, there seems to be some contradiction or ambiguity, and therefore those things must be clarified for easy understanding. So this is what the Acharyas do. Yeah, well, those are details because scripture is such that some things can be interpreted one way or the other. So in terms of Siddhanta, it doesn't really matter too much which version one takes. So sometimes we'll see Jiva Goswami says, the verse can mean this, or it can mean this, or it can mean this, or it can mean this. So he sometimes gives five different versions. He doesn't say which one he prefers even. Because Siddhantically, it doesn't really matter too much. It's just a matter of somebody expressing something or saying something, so they could mean this, they could mean that, they could mean that, they could mean that. So some things like that are not so important, so sometimes they have different opinions on what things will mean like that. At other times, as we see in the case of Baladeva or Vishwanath, both making commentaries in the Bhagavad Gita, they may take the same verses and use them in a different way, not to come up with contrary conclusions, but to express different ideas, which are not contrary to each other, but just different, that's all. But not contrary to the Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta, ultimately. So they will reason and argue on the basis of the context. And it can be taken either way. And therefore, some of the other Acharyas and other Sampradayas may decide one way or the other also on a certain verse or a certain group of verses. What do they mean? They mean this or they mean that? Do they mean karma yoga or bhakti? For instance, they have a karma nasasti prakavaya. So, Vishnu says bhakti must mean bhakti. Baladeva doesn't say that. Nor does Ramanuja, I don't think, say that. But Vishwanath says that and gives a justification for it in terms of that whole series of verses. So, nothing wrong with that. You can support it with some evidence and some good reasoning. But you can take it the other way also and give an explanation for it also. So, like that, there may be some minor differences within a sampradaya about certain things. And of course, all the Vaishnavas ultimately will have an agreement on the basic things, as opposed to Shankar's philosophy or something else, which is quite radically different. So basically, they're dealing only with minor issues, even within different sampradayas. The way they interpret is only the conclusion finally comes out the same thing.
Something happens when
But we should see it in the context of the whole. If it changes Siddhanta, then we have to see it in the context of the whole. And then we have to see that in the context of the whole of the Gaudiya Sampradaya also. Not isolate that from everything else. It should be seen in the context of the whole. So that is what the Acharyas do. Generally, they see the work in these particular words, in a particular verse, in its context, in a particular thought pattern or statement or paragraph or whatever, in the context of the chapter, in the context of the whole book, and take the whole book in the context of the whole of the Vedic literature and place it there and see how it fits in. So so we can't isolate one statement from scripture, other scriptures, or even from the same scripture. We have to take it in the same scripture and within the Sampradaya and within all of scripture. Well, mind and body are both material elements, basically, composed of material elements. Body is compared to gross elements, plus prana, and mind is composed of subtle elements. So they have their particular functions. The mind is the internal sense which gathers all of the information from the other senses together, and also is responsible for memory and other functions. But it doesn't function well in consciousness. And the mind is not consciousness. It's only a vehicle. Just like a TV screen is a TV screen. It's not the source of the power. It's not the source of the images or programming or anything. It's just a screen. It's just an instrument. So the mind also is just an instrument that contains a lot of things, like a hard disk or something. But it doesn't operate on its own. It needs an electric current to go through it. It needs other cells. It needs the motherboard. It needs so many things. So same mind is not, it seems to be operating independently, but it's not. So behind everything is the consciousness which comes from the Atma. King Rogana was initiated, not well, he got shiksha, not diksha as such. We don't see him giving a mantra or anything like that. So he got instructions. Which is generally what we'll see here in the Bhagavatam, and diksha is not really mentioned much anywhere. Like Narada and Brahma and whoever, you don't see a diksha taking place really. Did the Narada want to get diksha from the persons during the monsoon season? Doesn't say it. There's nothing mentioned really in any shiksha.
Is it
Well, Jiva Mukta has completed the process. He's in prema. One who starts chanting isn't in prema. So he chants, but he may not chant even purely. If he's not chanting purely, obviously the potency of the name is not fully manifest in him. So therefore, we will see him still affected by the gunas. If he is chanting purely, that is, he has correct siddhanta, etc., and he chants, still it may take some time for the full effect to manifest. That's all. Just as anyone can see Krishna, demons saw Krishna also, but they didn't get prema when they saw Krishna. So many people saw Krishna, but they didn't necessarily get prema, even they saw him directly, because they're covered, not qualified to see everything about him and appreciate his wonderful form and qualities. Well, and any way of bhakti is possible, any anga of bhakti is useful. But the Sankirtan is the Yuga Dharma, so this is the general process for most of the people in Kali Yuga. There may be exceptions to the rule, but that's the general process for most of the people.
Somebody doesn't have everything.
No, but it's more difficult. So they may, but they have advanced to a state where they can simply meditate on the Lord, but that's rather rare.
Mantra
obra.